Hello and welcome to the 6th episode of Season 9 of the Dark Money Files, in which we shine a light into a murky world. I am Ray Blake, and with me is my co-host, friend and business partner, Graham Barrow. Hello, Graham.
Hello, Ray.
Now, Graham, we were going to do part 3 of our series on fraud in this episode.
We were, Ray, yes.
But we're not going to be doing that for the time being, are we?
No, we're going to do a special episode.
Now, we've been helping our friends in the media with another investigation, but this one's a bit different from what we usually get up to.
Well, it is, because we've usually been part of, well, or assisting major teams of journalists from all over the world who were investigating multi-billion dollar laundromats.
This one, though, is much closer to home, much more personal, and involves nothing like as much money.
Yeah, but in its own way, Ray, I think it is at least as important as all of those, if not more so.
Well, I agree, but I think we're getting ahead of ourselves. Let's go back to the beginning, Graham.
Okay, well, as most of our listeners will know, one of our specialisms is in understanding suspicious UK company formations, because they are often at the heart of those global laundromats that we've just spoken about.
Exactly, but it's not just those global networks that they're useful for, because it's so easy to set up a UK company and it costs so little and there are no real checks involved, as we know, they're attractive to all sorts of criminal gangs and criminal enterprises.
Yeah, and because the global stuff tends to involve partnerships, whether they be limited or limited liability partnerships, other entity types can really easily slide under the radar.
Especially private limited companies, which are produced in such prodigious quantities that they're quite hard to monitor.
They are, but we do.
Well, we certainly do. And you in particular tend to post a lot of that content to social media.
Well, someone has to, Ray, and it suits my obsessive personality and an eye for details.
And all sorts of people tend to see this content, don't they?
Well, they do, and one of the sadder elements is the amount of people who then get in touch, wanting us to either help them with detailed investigations or investigate something on their behalf.
And that's tricky, because these types of investigations are rarely paid for, frankly, and we both still need to provide for our families.
We do, which is why we're okay with providing interviews or quotes to other investigative journalists and occasionally supplementing their research with some of our own existing content. But it really is very difficult for us to get involved in new investigations on behalf of others.
But as you say, sometimes someone comes along with an investigation that overlaps with work we've already done. And one such instance happened recently.
Yes, we were contacted by a journalist from the BBC who'd received a number of emails from people whose homes had been used without their knowledge or consent to register companies.
And it just so happened that these companies formed part of a much larger network that we've been tracking for months.
It did, and it added one previously unobtainable but vital part of the jigsaw.
Yeah, because we can only ever see the company formations. We've got neither the time nor, frankly, the authority to go round knocking on people's doors to find out what's going on at the sharp end.
Exactly. But here was a journalist from one of the BBC's flagship consumer affairs programmes who could do the bit we can't do. So it was really a no-brainer to say, yeah, of course we'll help.
And if I'm right, that initial conversation happened while you were on a bus on the way back from London, didn't it?
Well, it did. So of necessity, it was a little bit restrained.
From your end anyway, yeah. But you were able to provide considerable supporting evidence to help their endeavours further forward.
I did. It was a fantastic conversation because, I mean, in fact, what they were talking about, I could add to, because it was just sitting in my secure drive at my computer, pretty much waiting to be sent.
Okay, so what happened then?
Well, we had further conversations, which elicited the fact that the journalist, who's a lady named Shari Vahl, had been to see people in Oxford and Oldham who'd received Companies House letters out of the blue.
And it wasn't just one or two people, Graham, was it?
No, Ray.
No. In fact, almost every house in one street in Oldham had been targeted, along with a number of houses in several streets in Oxford.
Yeah, and all on the same day in late May this year.
Mm. So, two questions, Graham. Firstly, tell us a bit more about the letters. What did the letters say? But secondly, is there an economic angle to this? Are they looking for especially poor areas, or conversely, are they looking for wealthy ones?
Well, that is an interesting question. We'll come back to the letters in a minute. But that bit's interesting because the road in Oldham is a perfectly pleasant road on a relatively new housing development where the houses, frankly, only change hands really infrequently. But over the last few years, have sold between £100,000 and £150,000.
And looking at the roads in Oxford, there's quite a different picture there, isn't there? These are houses that sell for millions of pounds, you know, upwards of 5 million quid in many cases.
Well, yes. And that is quite a difference. Mm. I think we can safely say that there is no obvious underlying economic strategy as to who they target.
I was going to call them the haves and the have-nots, but it's more a case of the have a little bit and have very much mores. So, I mean, based on that evidence, no, there doesn't seem to be an underlying economic strategy. Now, you said nearly every house in one street in Oldham, Graham. How many houses was that in total then?
Well, it's only a small street, but seven of them were targeted.
Mm, all on the same day?
Yes.
Mm. Out of interest, how many companies had been registered there prior to the 26th of May, wasn't it?
It was, and that's a really interesting question, Ray, because in terms of companies, none.
Okay, you probably need to explain the distinction.
I think I probably do. So when you're registering a company, there are potentially a number of different addresses you could give. One of those would be the registered address of the company itself.
And no companies had previously been registered to this street that was now seeing all these registrations.
That's exactly right. Mm. But of course, the second address you can provide is the correspondence address or addresses of the directors.
Now, that doesn't have to be the same as the company's registered address, but it is going to appear on the register.
Yes, and that's the point. If you don't want your home address to appear, you can provide a correspondence address in addition to your usual residential address, although you do still need to provide that.
And you'd also need to provide three items of personal information. For example, your town of birth, your mother's maiden name, your father's first name, telephone number, national insurance number, passport number.
Yeah, which all sounds pretty official, doesn't it?
Mm.
Until you realise that none of that is actually verified.
So you could just put 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, right?
You could.
Mm. It makes you wonder why they bother.
I think that's a discussion for another day, you know.
Okay, well, I'm not going to hold my breath. But back to the radio programme, Graham. What about Oxford? Mm. How many there?
Well, in the case of Oxford, they spread them over a couple of days and three rows, but there were 16 in all.
And are these outliers in terms of numbers?
Not at all, Ray.
So how many have you seen at the same address then?
Well, there's a block of flats on the waterfront in Liverpool, which has, since the 1st of January 2021, become home to 800 companies.
A veritable hive of industry, Graham.
Yeah. And while there are far fewer, there is another block in Canary Wharf here in London. Very, very lovely place, which since the start of 2022 has become home to nearly 80 new companies.
Oh, I mean, innovation on a huge scale.
Industrial, yeah.
Industrial, quite. And I mean, this does happen all the time, doesn't it? We see this again and again.
We do, Ray, and it's not just during the week. They keep at it at the weekend as well.
Well, today, for example, we're recording on Sunday.
We are, and as we record this episode, Ray, there's a private home in Coventry where today a further 12 companies have been added to the 69 already registered there in the last 4 weeks.
We're back to the letters again. These people must be receiving the equivalent of companies' house confetti.
But it's not just Companies House, though. As we learned from You and Yours, which is the radio program we worked with, Companies House registration precipitates a whole panoply of marketing in the following days.
Yeah, and that can be anything from accountants, banks, to any other service you can think of that might want to target a new business.
Yeah, and for those poor, unfortunate people who had no say in the matter about their home address being used, they now have to deal with all of this incoming post.
I mean, I don't know how big your recycling bin is, Graham, but it can't accommodate even the levels of, you know, junk mail that we get as an ordinary household.
Tell me about it.
Now, some of this incoming post can be pretty bizarre, can't it?
Well, it can. So do you want to explain what happened to one couple who were featured on the programme?
Yeah, this was a really weird one. So after the company was registered to their address and they started getting all the obvious stuff that we've just spoken about through the letterbox, they also got a letter from the local education authority.
To them or to one of the directors of the company?
Well, neither, Graham. To someone else that they'd never heard of.
Really? And what was that about?
It was fining them for their daughter's non-attendance at school.
Except, as I understand, it wasn't their daughter.
Well, no, they haven't got a daughter.
So what was that about then?
Well, we're not really sure yet. Other than it would seem that once someone starts using your address, others appear to jump on the bandwagon too.
So, for the time being, what's been the result of the programme?
Well, the programme makers appear to have been inundated with people suffering the same problem. And it's not just them, is it?
Well, it's not, because while I was preparing to record the interview I gave for the programme, someone got in touch with me via Twitter who had the same thing happen to them.
And what did you do?
Well, with their consent, I put them in touch with the team at the BBC and they were able to add some brief details to this person's story at the end of the broadcast.
And those details, even in brief, are pretty horrific, actually, aren't they?
Well, they are, because this person was aware of at least 50 different credit applications being made in their name. And of course, Ray, even if they're not granted, this will have an almost instant impact on their credit score, as repeated applications for credit are seen as a very negative event.
So where does this story go next, then?
Well, I think there's a number of things. I think there's going to be a follow-up episode on You and Yours very soon.
And we've also been approached by the TV side of consumer reporting programmes, of course.
We have, and we've provided a potential story which we're now waiting to see if it warrants their further investigation.
And we've also spoken to other print journalists.
Yes, and there might be more about that, I suspect, in a follow-up episode.
Okay. So in the meantime, we've got some advice for anyone affected by similar experiences, haven't we?
We do, Ray. So would you like to explain what that advice is?
Absolutely. So look, if you've had your name or address or both used to register a company, or you've received letters that suggest your name may have been used but at someone else's address, and you either don't know how or don't want to speak directly to the media, get in touch with us.
Yes. Don't throw them in the bin is the other thing.
Well, indeed. Don't ignore them. They will not go away.
No, absolutely. So alert the people who are writing to you that you haven't had your name used. And then if you want it taken further and you don't want to speak to the media, you can email either of us. And that's our firstname.lastname@thedarkmoneyfiles.com. Mm-hmm. Or you can send us a private message on LinkedIn and we'll have a confidential chat with you to see what we can do to help.
Absolutely. So look, one way or another, this isn't a problem that's going away anytime soon, is it?
No, you're right, Ray, and it needs dealing with. I mean, I'm quoted on the programme as saying I believe around 150,000 bogus or scam companies are set up every year, and I truly think that could be an underestimate.
Which is a ridiculous number, Graham.
Well, Ray, it's more companies than the majority of jurisdictions around the world actually incorporate in total every year.
I mean, one, how on earth did we ever get in this position? But two, it's nice to know we're a world beater at something.
I'm not sure nice is quite the right word there, right?
Well, perhaps not. Where do we go from here, then?
Well, assuming there are no further revelations in this story in the short term, we'll return to part three of our fraud series, looking at what financial institutions are or could be doing to help.
I'm looking forward to it. Thank you.